Hello, everyone. This is Michelle Birdie, and you're listening to The Wordsworth from the Moscow Times. June 12th is a holiday in Russia, one of the new ones that no one can quite remember. This one is called День России, Russia Day, which sounds very impressive. But what exactly are we celebrating today? On June 12th, 1990, when Российская Советская Федеративная Социалистическая Республика, the Russian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic, aka RSFSR, was still a component part of Союз Советских Социалистических Республик, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, aka SSSR, USSR, the Supreme Soviet, or Parliament, voted for Декларация о государственном суверенитете Российской Федерации, Declaration of the State Sovereignty of the Russian Federation. Got that? This was not the Republic's independence from the Soviet Union, but it was a declaration that Russia could pass its own laws and regulations within the Union. At the time, that was a very big deal. I thought that this would be a good day to delve into a subject even more arcane than Republican sovereignty, and even more contentious than the dissolution of the USSR. I refer, of course, to the derivation of the word that was the progenitor of the name of this great nation. The word is Rus. And I am so sorry I did. It's a real mare's nest, and it has been since 1749, when Gerhard Friedrich Müller, the official Russian imperial historian and member in good standing of the Russian Academy of Sciences, began to give a speech before the Academy, summarizing his research into the origins of the name Rus and the people it described. He had come to the conclusion that Kievskaya Rus, Kievan Rus, was founded by Scandinavians. The hall erupted in outrage. He never finished his lecture and was forbidden from continuing with his research. The moral of this story is apparently still relevant today. Never let a Müller testify. Back to the Russian story, I mean the very early Russian story, one of the first mentions of these people was in a document dating to 839, where they were identified as Rus. A few decades later, another source identified them as Rusios, which is what the Greeks called them, due to their ruddy appearance. That is, they were not dark-skinned like other southerners, but red-skinned, perhaps from the sun. An Arab traveler also noted their ruddy complexion. The Primary Chronicle, partly written by a monk named Nestor, provides a wealth of confusing and contradictory information. In the first years of the 10th century, he wrote, translated into modern Russian, «И пошли чуд словени кривичи за моря к варагам, к Руси. Те варяги назывались Русью, как другие называются свии, а иные нормани и англии, и еще иные готы, вот так и эти. И от тех варагов прозвалась русская земля». And they went, the Chudes, Slavs, Krivichi, beyond the sea to the Varangians, to the Rus. Those Varangians were called Rus, just as others are called Swedes, and others Normans, and Anglians, and others Goths, like them. And the Russian land was named after those Varangians. Unfortunately, the chronicle is ambiguous. Sometimes the Varangians and the Rus are one people, sometimes they are not. And it places Slavic people just about everywhere. But according to one theory called the Normanist, the Rus were Norsemen, and their name was derived from an Old Norse word that meant men who row. Although there are some objections to this, mostly connected with how words developed over the centuries, it is supported by some evidence in the chronicle, and it's also supported by the fascinating detail that the local Finnic and Permic people in northern Russia used the same word for Swedes and Russians. A subset of this theory is that the Rus were originally a class, not a nation, which explains some of the chronicle confusion. If you don't like that version, there is the Slavic theory, which has several subsets. One states that all those red-faced names come from the Slavic root that has produced words like ryzhy, red-haired. This is supported by the fact that depending on the nation and time period, in the West and the Southwest, these people and their lands were called Rus, Rusia, Rusia, Rusi, Ruzhi, Ruzi, and even Ruzari and Ruzsia. Another subset of this theory is that there were Slavic peoples living on one of the tributaries of the Dnieper River, the Rus. Objections to this theory are also connected with word development over the centuries. For complicated linguistic reasons, the river Rus wouldn't mutate to a national group called Rus. And with those ambiguous primary chronicles. Among other theories is the outlier, supported by the otherwise great historian Mikhail Lomonosov, who believed that the Slavs were descendants of the Sarmatian people of Iran. There is almost no evidence to support this, but it sounds really good. In short, although there are more likely and less likely theories, no one theory is as yet totally convincing. However, all is not lost. There is new research going on every day, and perhaps there will be a theory accepted by all in our lifetimes. But if the first part of the story is uncertain, the rest of it is clear and, in fact, quite illuminating. The word Rus was first applied to the rulers and subjects under Varangian princes in the Kievan realm. Then, beginning in the 10th century, Rus began to mean the Christian inhabitants of that area. In the 14th century, when the power center in Kiev had collapsed, the successor states referred to all the lands once under control of Kiev as Rus. So, the lands conquered by the Lithuanians became White Rus, Ruthenia Alba, Black Rus, Ruthenia Nigra, and Red Rus, Ruthenia Rubra. Today, Ruthenia is used to describe the various national and ethnic groups living in the Transcarpathian region, which had passed from empire to empire over the centuries. The people who lived there eventually began to be called Ruthenians. In the north, Rus began to be used to describe all the lands under the control of Muscovy, as well as the lands originally under Kievan control. The people who lived there eventually began to be called Russians. All of these lands, both under Lithuanian and Muscovy control, were Christian and under the Patriarch of Constantinople. At first, there was one metropolitan in Kiev. But by the 14th century, there were two centers of Christianity in the east, one in Galicia and one in Moscow. The patriarch established two metropolitans, and to distinguish them, he called the one closest to him in Galicia Mikra Rosia, Inner or Little Rus, and the one farther away in Moscow Migale Rosia, Outer or Great Rus. All of that puts the whole Big Russia, Little Russia argument in a different light, doesn't it? Eventually, after a couple of centuries of name confusion, with foreign powers using two or three names to refer to Muscovy, that growing state in the east, Peter the Great exhibited his greatness by turning Rus into Russia and Moscovia into Rossiyskaya Imperia, the Russian Empire. All of this eventually leads to the name changes of the Soviet and post-Soviet period. The second moral of the story, in Russia, never ask, what's in a name? That's all for this week. До встречи на следующей неделе. Пока!